Facebook was a maligned influence. So I wasn't really particularly happy with the way that the country was going with the rapprochement to the West, because I guess I live in the West. And so for Syrians, what they would see as something desirable that they want to be a part of, I actually saw it for its flaws. Yeah. And I saw in Syrian society the things that they themselves didn't value or didn't think was cool or interesting. Like, for example, the principle of self-sufficiency, where, you know, we don't have iPhones, but we would produce our own electronics, or, maybe we don't have the latest fashions, but we create our own fashions.
Right.
And they were more interested in KFCs and new KFCs opening, whereas I liked the fact that Syria had a unique set of cuisine and restaurants that you can't get anywhere else in the world.
Of course.
So this is something, unfortunately, that I don't think will survive the new regime.
Of course. And what challenges have you faced in maintaining an independent voice online?
Well, I've had many death threats.
Death threats?
Yes, absolutely. From various sources. The Jolanists, for example, the ones that are supporting the current Al-Qaeda leader. And the ISIS, of course, the Israelis. Many death threats from the Israelis, attacks from the Zionist lobby, being named by the ADL, being named by Australian Zionist lobbies, attacked at my workplace or university. Like, they would, for years, send harassing letters. Actually, one of the funniest things that happened in 2014 was there's a guy called Dan Kizeta, who worked for a guy called Elliot Higgins. And they were responsible for trying to manufacture consent for a war on Syria. And this Dan Kizeta guy is entitled to Israeli citizenship, just FYI. And he wrote a letter to my university claiming that I was working with sarin gas in the laboratory. But I was doing theoretical chemistry. My work was all on the computer. So, yeah, this I have the letter, and, you know, the repercussions from that wasn't so bad, because obviously
right.
It was a joke what he did. But the guy he was working with, Elliot Higgins, the British Foreign Office also attacked me. They called me a Russian bot. You know, there was many media attacks that exposed my identity was doxed, my address was doxed, and the media would write harassing pieces about me constantly. And there's too many people to fight all the time. This is a problem. They tried to prevent me from submitting my PhD. So all of those things happen. But these are very small things compared to the suffering of people who are under the bombs or the soldiers that have to
right.
go to the front lines. So for me, it's a very simple sacrifice to make. So I always wondered if what I was doing had any positive effects. But I feel that recently more and more people have come to me and told me that I've changed their minds, or I started them on a journey when they were young, and they became who they were. Even people inside Australian Parliament have told me that, you know, watching my Twitter feed has changed their mind. Like, they were supportive of Israel for 20 years, but because of seeing what's happening in Gaza on my feed, suddenly they've looked at everything completely differently. Lucas Gage, he wrote the song "Boom Boom Tel Aviv." He will tell you that there was a time where his Twitter account was deleted. And, I brought it back. I helped him bring it back. So I feel like in small ways, I planted some seeds and I'm watching them grow. And I hope in future, my future is that the front lines are not going very well, to be perfectly frank,
right.
in Syria, in Lebanon, in Gaza. And hopefully they will be better in Iran. But there is another front line, and it's in the West. And it's the hearts and minds of the West, and that's where my future focus is going to be.
I wanted the conversation to go on for hours, but unfortunately, for the sake of time, we have to bring this to a close. But as a tradition of our show, towards the end of the program, our guests usually have 1 or 2 minutes to talk directly. Our audience will become yours, so feel free to share whatever you want with our audience.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me. I didn't know that I was going to be talking mostly about myself, so I apologize for that. I guess the most important thing I can tell you is that Israel is the Jewish ISIS, and they will not stop unless they are stopped. I feel that for the benefit of Iran, whilst, you know, I respect the opinions of the administration, I feel that the way of North Korea is the way to go, and there's nothing wrong with Iran having the nuclear bomb. In fact, I think the atomic bomb maybe the only way to protect Iran's borders, because Israel does have the atomic bomb, and they need an answer to that. Otherwise, they're going to continue to attack fearlessly. So I wish Iran the best of luck. I hope that it remains the backbone of the resistance. I'm sorry that Syria can't participate, but hopefully in future everything will change and our alliance will return.
Maram Sisley, it was a pleasure to have you on SOAP.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Thank you for staying with us on another SOAP. Until next time, it's goodbye from me, Bahman Rai.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio. Greetings from Tehran. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. Muslim scholar Ibn al-Haytham, known as Al-Hazen in Europe, who was born in 965 AD, formulated the scientific method and has been referred to as the world's first true scientist. He is also often regarded as the first theoretical physicist, making a significant contribution to the theory of light and optics. Additionally, he developed what is called celestial mechanics, which led to the eventual work of Europeans such as Copernicus, Galileo, Johannes Kepler, and Isaac Newton. We'll listen to the continuation of Iran Radio. Thank you for joining us. We start off this hour's programs with Youth Station, a program all about young people and dealing with topics related to youth. Next is Israel Watch. The program critically analyzes Zionist media reports about the current events and issues in the West Asia region. That will be followed by Back to Reality. In this roundtable discussion, young Muslims are invited to discuss some pertinent religious and social issues of today's Islamic world. Our varied radio productions feature will be next. Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
Islam, my deen.
Allah, my Lord.
His word, Quran.
Muhammad, prophet.
Praise be upon.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Youth
Station.
This is Asma, and I'm so happy to be here.
And this is Masuma.
I hope wherever you are, you're doing well and everything is just fine with you. How about you, Masuma? Are you okay?
Yes, thank God.
How's everything going?
Quite chaotic, but it's fine.
Still, we're surviving. Yeah.
Yes.
That's the spirit of a student.
Yes.
Yes. So, you know, sometimes to imagine how the future would go, because all the efforts we're making and all these hustles and bustles and these business are just for the future. Like, we want to make sure that we have a guarantee. We have guaranteed that blessing and prosperous future. But sometimes this thought crosses your mind that what if one day I wake up and things are no longer in harmony with whatever I've planned for them to be? Like, what if I wake up and then I'm ugly? I'm the elephant man.
Oh.
Yeah, in the worst possible way. Like, in a way that the society would no way digest me.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Or, I mean, let me put it this way, this very direct way, that which one do you prefer?
Mm-hmm.
Do you prefer yourself in this imagination to wake up as a penniless person or as an ugly person?
I'd rather be ugly.
Explain yourself, please.
So I think being ugly is not going to be that hard, because most of the time it's how you feel about yourself. And if you feel you're beautiful and you accept it, then you're fine with it. Like, I know many people around me who are really beautiful but feel ugly. And also I have seen that many other people that are not very conventionally attractive, but they have, you know, the character, the personality, and they're good to go.
Okay, then what's the problem with being penniless? Like, I feel it's easier to be penniless because you can work and gain the money.
No. If you have money, you can buy the beauty.
No, all the beauties are not buyable.
Most of them are.
No, you see, sometimes we have to have a clear-cut definition about what we're exactly talking. How do you define beauty? I guess that would be the question.
Well, how normal people do, height, weight, face, symmetry, eyebrows, stuff like that.
So then maybe we really do not have the same perspective about ugliness in this thought-provoking idea that I'm just dropping. See, when we talk about, I mentioned the example of Elephant Man. Like, he was so ugly in a way that nobody could digest him in the society. And by the way, that was as a result of wars and stuff like that, that he, because in many documentaries even, you can see that the people who come out of war and then their face have been deformed in a very ugly way, even they themselves cannot look at the mirror.
Oh, so we're talking about the extremes.
It's so extreme. I told you, it's the imagination. Like, put yourself in the place of that person. Like, nothing is going to buy your face for you.
Okay, you're kind of convincing me. You're good at convincing, girl. I was literally fine with being ugly till this moment.
No, the ugly you had in your mind, I guess, was being unattractive.
Probably. I thought I would get it as plastic surgery and I would be fine.
No, there are many movies out there. Like, you know, the mental crash that it would... Okay, let's go for a break and then we'll come back to talk about this. Take this as a cliffhanger. This is the ground of our discussion. We'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Yes, I was just saying that sometimes this ugliness creates such a mental crash and disorder that you cannot deal with it. Like, there are many people whom, after suffering from a period of time when they are actually going through, after like an accident, they have to go to many surgeries in order to get their face back, not a beautiful face back, their own face back, but they cannot get that back the same way God has given it to them. Like, at first, whoever you are, even if you're not attractive, you can be confident, because being unattractive is different from being ugly.
Yes.
Ugly is the minority. and ugly is always judged. And don't tell me that it does not affect you, because as a human being, it is.
It does. Of course it does.
And I cannot come into a community and believe that nobody else is looking at me. Because they do.
Yeah, they do. We are looking at
people,
of course.
And they judge you.
Yeah.
And they judge you. The hardest part is that they would judge you. Now you are your beautiful shape, and they judge you. So what about I'm not the same person that I used to be?
That is very, very thought-provoking, because at first I thought we're talking about little insecurities that we see in teenagers, like some textured skin, and I don't know, big nose.
That.
But you're talking about extremes, and now that you think about
that. Okay, I will give you another example.
Okay.
This always would be justifying.
Mm-hmm.
See, even, you see these teenagers have got too much pimples on their face?
Yes.
They cannot even have interaction with their friends because of the pimples. They do not see their face in the mirror. They see pimples.
Yeah.
Like pimple getting to be a human being.
So that can be solved with money, you know. There are so many good doctors, dermatologists.
What about the trauma it has created in you?
Okay, I'm convinced. I'd rather be beautiful and penniless.
What about the ugly people then?
Let's be fair. Most of the time, we don't have ugly people. It's just different types and different tastes. Someone that you might call ugly, I might call beautiful. That is also a thing.
Oh, I hope you can pardon me, but I think that's more of a slogan.
No.
Yes, there are no ugly people. You might.
I'm not saying there are no ugly people, so I did not say that.
No, you say that it depends on your perspective.
Yeah, it highly depends on your perspectives, and there is also a side of character that every person is at some point given a chance to prove their inner beauty as well. So we need to take care of that as well. We need to take that point into consideration as well.
You're mentioning a very good point.
And I have seen very beautiful people that once they opened their mouth, and then they were the ugliest creatures for
then
me.
The ugliness comes out.
Yes, and then I could never unsee the ugliness ever.
Exactly.
See, that is also a thing. So God forbid, even if someone is like literally very, very, very ugly, we're talking about the extremes. We're not talking about simple insecurities that society has
created. It's imagination. And
we're free to imagine.
Yeah, we're free.
There is still this factor that there is inner beauty, and of course that is, you know, beauty fades by age. That is also a thing.
Do you think it would differ from one gender to another? Like female would pick, okay, I can't stand ugliness, I would pick pennilessness. Like I would rather be penniless but not ugly.
I am doing that currently. I just accepted that.
Yeah, so I think I'm just asking, is it the matter of gender?
I don't think so. I think it's more of how individuals think. I know people who would not leave their house, some men or boys, who would not leave their house unless they look perfect.
Oh, yeah.
The universe
has changed.
Yeah, and this universe, we cannot, you know, put divisions by genders.
You cannot categorize it by gender. Yeah, I do believe so.
Yes.
As well.
On the other side, I know some friends who don't care at all. They just put their hijab on and they leave.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't do any specific thing. They don't care about how
skincare,
they look.
Skincare, routines.
Nothing. No, they believe in I'm beautiful anyhow.
Yeah.
And then just leave.
Yeah, that's very true. So what we actually are talking about in today's episode of A Youth Station is which one you'd rather to pick, like ugliness or being penniless. So maybe the real answer isn't choosing between poverty and ugliness, but realizing that dignity and kindness outshine both. So by the way, you're listening to Youth Station. Masma and I are talking about ugliness and poverty. And we got to this point that, yes, ugliness in its extreme form is very hard to defeat.
And also poverty is very hard. You see, you said earning money is kind of easy. I think that's because...
Not easy compared to ugliness, I said it.
No, I think I'd rather... No, now that I'm thinking again, let's imagine, right, currently I am earning money only for myself. I don't need to support my family.
Exactly.
My family is healthy and happy. They're doing good by themselves. Yeah. I'm just, you know, earning a little money. I don't know, for my skincare and, you know, just for my little luxurious
stuff.
Extra expenses and nothing really that serious. But now, poverty, on the other hand, we have seen how much Islam has also told us that it can lead to losing your faith. That means that this is harder. At some point, you might not care how I look, but you would care that my family is starving, and I don't know, my children are sick, and just money could solve it all.
Yeah, you know, there's a quote that is very beautiful, and it says that some people are so poor, all they have is money. You know, sometimes the money you have, now we talked about ugliness and we also talk about poverty, but I do believe that being so rich in your pockets doesn't mean that you're rich in your heart.
Of course, that is also
That's why I usually think fighting poverty is perhaps a little bit easier than actually fighting that poverty which exists inside of you, in your heart and in your mind.
I don't think so. I totally understand they both are a kind of hardship, but I think poverty is a lot harder. And we have heard also in our religion that Allah says that poverty is a kind of test. And it's a hard test. We know that. Of course, Allah has also mentioned that I will test you by giving you wealth and also by taking wealth away from you. That is both. So both of them are hard. But I personally think not having money or, you know, being in a lot of expenses and all, that is harder.
So hard, yeah.
A lot
now,
hard.
You see, what we are doing right now in here is talking on paper.
Yes.
This is easier on paper.
Yes.
Easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
Practicing it would be very difficult. And why I didn't talk about that slogan that beauty is deepest skin, because, you know, it's time to face it. Like, no, sometimes your appearance also is going to say a lot about you.
Not sometimes, most of the time. Let's accept
that. Yeah, both of them are very difficult, but I do believe that, as you just said, if the ugliness is not extremely vivid, like you walk in the society, and because that's very difficult, you know, realizing and sympathizing with the feeling that a person with a deformed face has to go through is very difficult. Like, imagine imagining myself being a child going to school and then after that wishing to graduate, wishing to have a future for myself, yet being deformed physically, it's a total hardship.
I understand it, but, you know, I think in both cases, beauty and money, either we have it or not.
Yeah.
That is what our religion has taught us. It's a test.
Yeah,
if we have the beauty, are we going to get arrogant? If we don't have the beauty, are we going to be hopeless? If we have the money, are we again going to be, you know, rude and all?
Yeah.
And if we are in poverty, are we going
we
to be patient?
We may turn to Pharaoh, like the stories that we have of all these kings and queens that were so proud to the point that they got themselves as a god.
Yeah.
They thought they are the god of their own era. So money also brings about corruption. But all that we care about is that, yes, money matters, beauty matters, but not at the expense of losing your inner beauty.
Yes.
This is the point which we really have to recognize. And yes, also your perspective matters too much. But sometimes the burden of poverty and the burden of ugliness is so huge that you cannot fight it with your own perspective, because society is going to actually minimalize you.
Yes, but we should know that we don't have to fight this battle all alone.
Exactly.
We need to take help from God. So as we learn in Surah Al-Hujurat, the most honored of you in the sight of Allah is the most righteous of you.
Yeah.
So this ayah is literally enough, if I am poor, rich, ugly or beautiful, to know that I need to
prioritize me in the God's eyes is my obedience to him and how pious I am.
And indeed, it's a very hard battle to be, you know, to have a strong faith.
We tried not to talk any slogans today. Sometimes poverty is going to hide the generous hearts. And sometimes money is going to highlight the people that do not have anything deep down in their hearts.
Yes.
So you have to be careful about these very paradoxical ideas that money is everything and then beauty is everything. No, the thing that matters the most is your heart and is your obedience to God. So this was all for today. I hope you have enjoyed it. Until another episode, wassalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you dear youth will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This life as you know, you reap what you sow. And when you do good, Allah will protect you and stop you falling down. Allah, we surrender, 'cause He knows all, no compromise. Hears your laugh and feels your cry, He is there all the time. Make dua, praise Allah,
this is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Roundtable from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of iRabi English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite, Back to Reality. Yes, once more we are here to bring you back to another reality, which is the concern of today's world, I guess. And it's very prevailing everywhere. And I hope wherever you are, you're doing well and everything is just going so fine with you. So, welcome to this episode. This is Asma. Once more, I have the honor to be with you. And with me, I have two very dear guests, Brother Liaqat and Brother Muhammad. Welcome, both of you, to the studio, and assalamu alaikum.
Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum.
So, well, I know you already know how the ritual of this program goes. I would like you to give us a very brief introduction about yourself and about your background. What have you been doing all these years? So, let's start with Brother Liaqat.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm from India, Muhammad Liaqat Abbas from India. And I've done my bachelor's in history of Islam. And right now I'm doing my master's in psychology.
Very good. And you?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. My name is Muhammad, and I have studied a lot about the Quran and Islamic studies. While my university degrees are not related to this, I have a bachelor's in English literature and also English language teaching, master's in English language teaching, but I'm mostly interested in topics related to the Quran especially, and also a hadith and anything Islamic, and I've done a lot of research in this field.
So I guess we have a perfect combination in here, psychology and Islamic research, which is going to help us too much to bring things into reality and into the spotlight of reality. Well, does geography decide faith, or is belief stronger than borders? Well, this is a really great question. Like, there are many people right now in today's world in which it has turned into a small village. There are many people who think that if they migrate into another country, life would be different. Everything would be different. We have been through that in many other episodes in Back to Reality. Now, we don't want to get into that. But the major thing that we're going to talk about, and which is actually the at-stake concern of today's episode, is the idea that can I be and remain Muslim practicing the same faith that I had in my homeland, and at the same time be in a non-Islamic country, which I guess is a bit challenging.
I can be a good Muslim, a real Muslim, a practicing Muslim in a non-Islamic country with a different lifestyle, different culture, different structure, social structure, everything. Yeah, it is possible, but with a lot of challenges.
With a lot of difficulties.
A lot of difficulties.
Nowadays, things have changed totally. They've changed upside down. Like, mm-hmm. It goes topsy-turvy. Why? Because right now, even if you go into another city, maybe of your own country, and then enter a new university, and then the people of there are totally different from your own people, so you're going to suffer from the same thing.
Definitely.
So yes. Faith must remain faith.
Faith must remain faith. There's a reason, like, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us the opportunity, option, to migrate, like, in order, wherever you find a lot of difficulty, to stay in a place. And, of course, there are other reasons, too, that a person needs to migrate. Example, if you consider Imam Hussein, alayhi salam, he went and stood against Yazid of his time, of course, Yazid ibn Muawiyah. So, because of the injustice, he had to leave a place. Of course, he was living peacefully in Medina, and he was practicing the religion of Islam.
And but he could have been like others.
Mm-hmm, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, even
he had that choice too.
There were thousands of people, and more than that, of course, who have not accompanied him, who did not support him, but still he went against injustice of his time. So I would say, yeah, staying in that place comes with a price. Example, if at all, if you are practicing Muslim, if you are, but the thing is, culture is dominating over you or your family, or the lifestyle is dominating you and your family, then I would say migrating should be a better option.
It's an option, but with too much of difficulties. Like, mm-hmm. I've seen many of my friends, and they're good people, they're very well-mannered, and they are really, really Muslims deep down in the core of their existence. But the thing is, when you go somewhere with a totally different perspective, change is inevitable, unfortunately. You'd be affected.
Yes.
That's right.
So what are the ways?
Okay, the question was, could you be a real Muslim in an environment with different values? Or you have to, you know, be in the same community among Muslims in order to be a good Muslim? Well, the answer is pretty clear. I mean, you could be a Muslim anywhere. Like, nothing should affect you as a Muslim. Not the environment, not the time, not the age, I don't know, not technology. It's going to make life really hard, but at the end of the day, it's you who has to, you know, like resist and have taqwa. So, you know, it's possible. It's perfectly possible. But the thing is that if you are in a place, you know, you're placed in a society where there is a lot of moral corruption and, you know, it's extremely difficult to be a good person, you're going to have a harder time than a person who lives in a society among people who have the same religion as that person, the same culture as that person.
Yeah.
Life is going to be a lot easier in a place where the culture is the same, the religion is. Once you go somewhere else, you might be affected by that culture. You might be influenced. So it's perfectly possible in both scenarios. But the thing is that it's all up to you to be able to resist.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
If you think it's too hard for you to stay in one place where there's a lot of corruption and sin and whatnot, then just migrate to another place so that you don't have a hard time practicing
religion.
It's not
going to be that
easy. So
it's
easier for you. I know, yeah. If it's not possible, then you have to have taqwa. Then you have to persevere. You have to resist.
So you, with your experience, maybe you can, but how can you actually inculcate that to your children? Islam, of course, can survive outside Islamic laws and socialist structures. Like, you don't have any border for Islam. It's not like if you go to another country, you're going to lose your faith. But the thing is that changes are going to happen very slowly, so that you wouldn't actually realize that you have changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the lifestyle changes, I would say, because the culture of the society has a lot of impact.
Yeah,
and
no matter how much restraint you're going to show.
Yeah. Of course, just like the brother has stated, the person should be really a big muttaqi. I mean, like someone who has a lot of taqwa, has a lot of fear of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, knows the Islamic laws perfectly, and has a very strong belief. But if someone is not, because everyone doesn't have this in their mind, yeah, example, and no, like not everyone does have a strong belief system in themselves or follow Islam as it should be followed.
And not everyone knows it perfectly.
Definitely. So the chances, the very chance to dissolve oneself into the system of culture, tradition, corruption, everything, the possibility rises high, I would say. So, yeah, like I know a lot of societies, communities, the community from which I myself am. And I have seen a lot of culture getting dissolved in religion. And when I used to oppose them, they used to say, this is religion, you see. And they would say, and they would claim themselves that we are practicing Muslims.
You meant the other way around, religion being dissolved in culture, right? Not culture and religion.
Because, they say this is religion to culture. See? Like this, in this manner.
Yeah, religion is being dissolved
into
culture. Yeah,
so this, in this manner, the culture is getting dissolved, according to them, of course. But they say this is religion, you see? And when someone opposes them, they say, oh, you know what? This guy, who is he? Like, he has gone to some other place, done some studies, and now he's teaching us what religion is? So they're going to oppose the example, the scholar who
mm-hmm.
teach them what actual religion is, you see?
Yeah.
So even if oneself calls himself or herself, for example, a practicing Muslim and a very strong Shia, example, to be frank, but there are a lot of issues in them, like I would say, because I've gone to a lot of villages, I've gone to a lot of communities and societies, and I have seen them with my own eyes. And even if I do tabligh, even if I want to preach religion, they would say, oh, you know what? This is a new religion you're talking to us
yeah.
about. And the religion which we are following until now doesn't have the
it's
stuff.
It's a different school.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's astonishing.
If you're living in a non-Muslim country where there's a lot of so-called freedom there, freedom of expression, freedom of, I don't know, speech or whatever, it's very difficult to raise children in such, you know, societies, in such countries that are like, they are advocating religiosity, actually. They're saying that, why should you believe in God? Or they're like a lot of, there's a lot of atheism in
exactly
non-Muslim countries. And it's a really challenging thing to do, to properly raise your children so that they're good Muslims in another, in a non-Muslim country. I agree with that. But it's possible. You know, we should not force people to, you know, you have to stay in Muslim countries. Some people, they have the choice. If they want, they can live somewhere else for whatever preferences they have. But they should be able to safeguard their religion, their children.
I've seen a lot of people, like amongst my close friends even, who have migrated, like, mm-hmm. from non-Islamic countries to Islamic countries, I would say. And when I have asked them the reason, like, what about you? What about you? Like, do you have a job? Did you have a job over there? Were your earnings good enough and stuff like that? They really had good jobs, like, really, okay? And they had houses, and they had cars, everything. But just because of the reason that they were afraid that their faith is going to get compensated for money, for beliefs and stuff. And one of the brothers, interestingly, he told me, if I have to go back to my country, I would only go back after my daughter gets married, you see? And he moved to an Islamic country, like, when his daughter was 2 years old. And he is of the thought that, okay, if I have to go back, I have to make sure my daughter got married, and then I'm going to go back.
So that they're past this age of vulnerability.
Exactly. The age where a person can change and can become a bad guy.
I do believe that
say.
Us human beings, mm-hmm. we work as sponges. Yes, we have free will and we have creed inside of us, and maybe we even believe so steadfastly. But the thing is, this sponge is going to absorb things from the environment. I do believe that.
You know,
like,
there are good wives and bad
wives. Yourself being mm-hmm. a student living in a non-Muslim country, then you need a job. You need to work, but then there are some stuffs you're not supposed to do there. So at the very beginning, you don't tell yourself that, okay, I'm losing my faith. No, you say that I'm doing this because of this, and God would be satisfied with me. I would justify
myself.
The
problem is with you, then. It's not the environment.
There are a lot of this you out there.
No, I know a lot of people who are better Muslims than a lot of us in, you know, Western countries.
Mm-hmm. I do agree that we have free will, but still the environment is going to have impact on me because I'm a human being and I'm a cauldron of emotion and feelings, and I cannot be like a stone. But still, I have that free will, I have God, and this link between He and me is going to be the thing that's going to help me decide much more logically and for the benefit of me and my family. So this was all for today's episode. I hope you have enjoyed that. Until another back to reality. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the ummah rise again. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim. Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again, let us see daylight again, once again.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. English Radio.
Shahjahan Square, one of the biggest and most beautiful squares in the world. A UNESCO World Heritage Site that must be on your bucket list.
Naqsh-e Jahan Square is located in the center of the city of Isfahan. It was built during the 17th century, during the Safavid era. This square, with its rich historical background, is one of the most spectacular attractions of the city of Isfahan.
On the western side of Naqsh-e Jahan Square, you find an exquisite palace, which is known as Ali Qapu. It was built during the Safavid era, and it was considered the political center of the country.
Ali Qapu literally means Great Gate. The palace is actually a six-story building, but you won't realize this until you go to the backyard. It was here that the Safavid king would entertain his special visitors. He also celebrated Nowruz, the Persian New Year.
We've just been to the palace. It's absolutely beautiful. We went up the staircase to the number of levels and just saw the amazing decorative artwork, and then went up to the top chamber where we believe the musicians used to play, the amazing acoustics.
This amazing structure is rich in wall paintings. The doors, walls, and ceilings are highly ornamented with intricately designed floral motifs. On the sixth floor is where royal receptions were held and was referred to as the music hall.
The main attractions of Naqsh-e Jahan Square are the mosques that are located in it. Mosques that are not only considered masterpieces of Iranian Islamic architecture, but that are famous for their tile works.
Imam Mosque, also known as Jame Abbasi Mosque, is on the south side of the square. It is considered an excellent example of the Islamic era architecture of Iran. Its splendor is mainly due to the beauty of its seven-color tiles.
Probably the most amazing part of this mosque is its tile works. The tiles are so intricately designed that you can even find postcards and replicas of them around the square.
The magnificent tile work serves a double function. Aside from ornamenting the mosque, there was a need to weatherproof the simple clay bricks used in its construction. The tiles are decorated in seven colors, which is why they are called haftrang, which literally means seven colors.
It's absolutely beautiful. It's so big and colourful. And what else, Dan?
Yeah, the tiles and the decorations are amazing, aren't they? Yeah.
Here you can find one of the most exquisite masterpieces of Iranian architecture, Sheikh Lutfullah Mosque, which was built by Shah Abbas I of the Safavid dynasty.
Fascinates me most about this mosque is, first of all, architecturally it's a unique work. You don't have anything like that in any part of Iran or elsewhere, because it's a private mosque built for the father-in-law of Shah Abbas the Great. In terms of ornament, what fascinates me most is the interplay of natural tile colors with various sorts of blue color in these in the whole composition. The composition of natural tile color with blue, that's unique and that's very nice.
I can't tell you enough about the beauty of Sheikh Lutfullah Mosque, but in my opinion, the most amazing part is the tile work under the dome. And if you're familiar with Persian carpets, you will find this design quite familiar.
The Bazaar of Isfahan is one of the oldest and largest bazaars in the Middle East. Some parts of it are more than 1,000 years old. The bazaar is abundant in handicrafts, so if you're looking for a little something to take back, this is where you need to go. One of the most interesting parts of Naqsh-e Jahan Square is Qaisariyye Bazaar, one of the longest bazaars in the world that connects Naqsh-e Jahan Square to Atiq Square. It's about 8 kilometers long. The square is still as vibrant as it was, today mostly with the presence of tourists rather than merchants. But it is still reminiscent of its days of glory, when public ceremonies were held, Nowruz was celebrated, and polo games were played. Now, after all of these amazing things, there's only one thing I can say. Visiting Naqsh-e Jahan Square must be on your bucket list. Gisumi Shah Ahmadi for Iran.
Good evening to all our listeners. This is Iran Radio. Very nice to have you with us. We'll start this hour's programs with our news bulletin that will be followed by today's special daily mix format program that deals with various Islamic and Iranian occasions. Our radio productions feature will be next. And our final program this hour is Leader's Speech, presenting an English translation of a selection of the statements and speeches of the Honorable Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei. Stay with us for this hour.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
United Nations Commission of Inquiry concludes Israel has committed genocide in Gaza, and that top Israeli officials have incited that genocide. And as the genocide in Gaza continues, the Israeli Prime Minister admits that the regime is facing growing isolation on the world stage. And Tehran underlines that all nations should be given guaranteed protection against any form of attack or threat of attack against their nuclear facilities. Hello everyone and welcome to World News. Our top story, the Israeli military has killed now over 50 Palestinians in new attacks across Gaza since dawn this morning, as a genocidal rampage rages on. Israeli airstrikes targeted a number of areas across Gaza City, including Al-Sabra, Al-Daraj, Al-Shati refugee camp, Tel Al-Hawa, and surrounding areas. Residents report unrelenting bombing as thousands are fleeing south. Israeli War Minister Yasriel Katz hailed Gaza City offensive, declaring, quote, that Gaza is burning. Meanwhile, three Palestinians were martyred in Deir al-Balah camp in central Gaza, and five others in a residential home in northern Gaza. Their bodies were transferred to Al-Shifa Hospital. Over 60 people remain missing under rubble in Al-Daraj and Sheikh Radwan. U.S. Israeli